158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, Sam Bowman, and Jasmine Moss. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Catherine Carley, Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Porter, and Eric Gladys. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yerkov.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. It's an election year, and a lot of focus is being placed on the presidential election, but it's not the only race that will have an impact on people's lives. A lot of that comes down to state and local elections, and in order to make the best decision on where to cast their vote, voters need information. That's where the Rural Organizing Project and their stand guide come in. To learn more about that, I'm speaking with Emma Renee Derning from ROP. Welcome to the show, Emma.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for stopping by to talk with us about this. So we got to get some primer in here for folks who may not know. What does Rural Organizing Project do?
Rural Organizing Project is an organization that's all over the state, and we are made up of over 75 volunteer-run organizations that are autonomous, so they set their own priorities, but everybody's working to advance democracy and human dignity. And our job as a network is to build each individual group's ability to make the change they want to see at the local level and come together in important statewide issues that folks agree to work on. And election season is one of those times where everybody comes together to make the best we can out of this opportunity.
Well, I understand ROP does a lot of organizing around the election, and we'll talk about those things. But one of them is the stand guide that you put out every 2 years to help with voter education. What can you tell me about those guides?
Yeah, our stand guide is a newsprint guide. So it's like a little mini newspaper, just one sheet. And we distribute tens of thousands all over the state in English and Spanish every 2 years, as you said. And the guide is designed by and for small town and rural voters to break down confusing statewide ballot measures and the rhetoric that we hear around election time and try to make tough issues as accessible as possible through focusing on our shared values of democracy and human dignity.
What are some of the things that are in this year's guide?
Yeah, every year we have information about the statewide ballot measures, and so we give people easy to understand language of just what the heck this measure does, because sometimes it can feel really confusing when you get that ballot in the mail. And then our board also takes positions on those ballot measures, looking at whether they advance democracy or take away from the democratic process. So we have in-depth info on the ballot measures on one page. We also have information about what local elected officials are responsible for. So on the front page, you'll see your city council and what the city council does. They have responsibility over housing. They have responsibility over city police, if your city has police, parks, road and sewer, that sort of thing. And we try and give people a quick rundown of what a county commissioner is responsible for, what the state government does, who the secretary of state is, like what is that position? A lot of things that I certainly didn't learn when I was going to school and have had to learn through the process of getting involved. This year, we also are sharing information about Project 2025 because we've been hearing that a lot of folks are concerned about it and feel that it's going to have a big impact on this election cycle. So we're breaking down what Project 2025 is and sharing our vision for rural communities and how we can live and thrive everywhere across Oregon that we live.
What are some of the actions that you're encouraging people to take with these stand guides?
Yeah, the stand guide is a tool that our groups order however many they want to be able to have conversations with their neighbors. This year, on the outside of the guide, before you even open it up, it says, "Hey neighbor, what's on your mind?" And it guides folks through an open-ended conversation to help connect people. I think election time is often, wow, I'm getting so many texts from strangers and they just want my money or they want my vote. And we try and take elections as an opportunity to build relationships and to start working on a longer term scale. We do care that people vote and participate in democracy on November 5th, but democracy also happens all year round. And so our groups take this as an opportunity to get the information out that their neighbors need to be able to make informed decisions, but also maybe meet some new friends that want to get involved in their work to stop evictions in their town or their work to make sure their community is safe and welcoming to everybody that lives there. So the tool is really here to kind of kickstart conversations. A lot of people are taking them and knocking on their neighbors' doors, or they're bringing them to candidate forums that they're either hosting or participating in. And on the inside, we have some suggested questions to ask candidates that are targeted at kind of that specific level of office, what they have responsibility over. And let's really interview these people. We're hiring them to work for us. So let's figure out if they share our values and are going to be responsive to our priorities and our needs as a community. Other folks are mailing them. We mail them to everybody that we have an address for, and some of our groups will also pop them in the mail and have an extra little note on them that's, hey, make sure to come to our meeting next month. So there's a lot of different ways that people use them. Some people want to bring them to their Pride event or community potluck and just share it with their neighbors at their at the post office or wherever they're connecting with people. But the tools ideally getting information people need and also starting a conversation about how we can work together to move beyond this election season, because obviously one vote is not going to solve all of the challenges that we're currently facing, but it could put us in a good position to solve those challenges in the coming years.
Well, yeah, off of that idea, you mentioned working towards a longer term scale and that sort of visioning. I'm wondering, what has been the reaction or the impact from past stand guides? ROP has been doing this for quite some time.
Yeah, we've been putting out election guides for over 20 years now. And last time around, so in 2022, we distributed 33,000 guides. And I mean, you can look at the ballot measure results as a really clear one-to-one connection that we have won many of the ballot measures that we endorsed, and we have stopped from many other ballot measures from passing that we were not in support of. But you can also look at the strength of our network of autonomous groups. We have, for the first time ever this year, member organizations in every single county except for Portland's County, Multnomah, because we don't work there, we're rural. Every single county has a member in the Rural Organizing Project Network. And many of those groups started out of a particular crisis or opportunity moment, including election cycles. And stand guides are a way that groups can stay strong, become stronger by distributing them and meeting with neighbors and getting to know new folks around the state. So, and the other piece is that stand guides really are just the beginning. We see people starting by voting or maybe starting somewhere completely different, and then getting involved for the long haul. And we have won really incredible legislation at the state level. We've passed really awesome policies at city or county level. And stand guides may have been the way that two neighbors met and that sparked an idea. A lot of it is hard to quantify, but in the fair numbers, 33,000 guides went out last year, in 2022.
Well, it's not just stand guides that ROP is working on this election season. I understand there's some other preparatory actions that your organization is working on. What are those?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we put the stand guide out. It's a newsprint guide and it's a paper copy. We also have a digital guide that people use. And in the last probably 4 years, especially since COVID, when folks were trying to get creative about how to reach out to their neighbors, we started to get requests for content in different formats. And this is election specific, but also outside of elections. A lot of our folks are interested in building power and building their megaphone through local radio or like KBOO or newspapers or social media. And so this year we're starting a Rural Roots Rising strategic communications cohort where volunteers who are particularly eager to build their skills around communicating with their neighbors and want to collaborate with other folks from different parts of the state are gathering together virtually, and we're going to build a team that's focused on radio, a team that's focused on social media video content, a team that's focused on op-eds, et cetera, just based on who's interested in what platform. And we're going to be creating content that's election related, but is not in newsprint. It's able to be more agile and more responsive to whatever might come up in September, October, and November, and then also be part of responding to what the results were and where we're going from here. So that group will be creating specific content that they're excited about and is relevant for a statewide audience. And then the other piece that is even more responsive than that is that folks are quite concerned that this election people will face threats and intimidation for trying to exercise their right to vote, or that election officials and county clerks and the Secretary of State might face harassment or intimidation in trying to protect our free and fair election cycle. So part of what we're doing for that is building infrastructure at the county level of, okay, what does your community need to be most prepared for this? Another part of what we're doing is partnering with a national hotline called the Election Protection Hotline, and you can find more info about them at 866-OurVote.org. But this hotline has trained lawyers that volunteer to answer calls. They answer calls in, I think, 13 different languages or something that we as a six or seven person staff team can only dream of doing on our own. So they'll be able to answer easy, like kind of what's your rights or where's your ballot drop box kind of questions. And then we will be answering along with our partners at Common Cause and potentially others in the state of Oregon, Oregon-specific calls that require a broader or a more kind of organizing-based approach of like, oh, wow, there's people rallying outside of the county clerk's office and trying to get them to stop counting ballots. Okay, let's bring our community together and really have a coordinated response at the local level. So we're really excited to be partnering with this national organization as well as organizations in the state of Oregon to protect our communities and make sure that we can have a free and fair election this cycle where everybody who wants to can fully participate. And a lot of our members are distributing information about the hotline, because if you don't know about the hotline, you can't get support from it. But that's the third piece that we're really prioritizing this cycle, is making sure everybody can vote and has the information they need to vote.
To your mind, what is the importance of focusing on local elections, especially for rural Oregonians?
I think a lot of focus is placed on the presidential election. It's the most money goes into it. The national media covers it very heavily. But when we look at what has the biggest impact on your everyday life as an Oregonian, often it's things that the county commission or the city government or your school board is doing. What your kids are learning in school has a lot more to do with what your school board is putting forward and how they're supporting or not supporting the school staff than it does with who's in the White House and who the president is at one particular time. And I think a lot of folks feel like, oh, my vote doesn't matter. It's so big. We have how many millions of people in the U.S.? One vote isn't going to make a difference. But in city or county races, last election, votes literally like 1 to 3 votes made the difference between this city councilor or that city councilor, or this ballot measure passing or this ballot measure not passing. And Grant County was not able to fund their pool because they lost by just a handful of votes on that bond measure. So I think people can feel that impact more specifically. When you think about the county commission is responsible in many counties for public health, for funding like mental health resources in a local community, for making decisions about housing resources and how they're distributed or how they're spent in a county. And a lot of that really hits close to home. Same with state government. We have so much of our school system is funded through state dollars, as well as federal. But you know, all these pieces are really tangible. Like it really, you feel it in as you're going about your day or your week. But the media that we have access to doesn't necessarily tell you what your city councilor is thinking or what that candidate who's running for county commission is going to do with that power. So it's really up to us as small communities to get information out about who these people are and what these positions are responsible over so that our communities can make well-informed decisions about who they want leading.
If listeners are interested in learning more about Rural Organizing Project, the Stand Guide, or any of the topics we talked about, what is the best way for them to do that?
Our website is rop.org. Folks are also welcome to call or text me at 541-588-2053 or email. My email is emma@rop.org. So that's general info on us. We also have a bunch more details on our website. If you want to order stand guides specifically, we have about another week and end of this week that our public forum will be open to order however many guides you want in English and Spanish, and that you can find on the homepage, but is also you can get to directly with rop.org/stand2024. After that, we will still be taking some orders, but it depends. We just depends until we run out. So get those orders in as quickly as possible, and you can also email me if that doesn't work out, or call and text me again, 541-588-2053 if you are not an internet user. And we would love to be in touch. I think it's this election season, but it's also the whole next year and the whole next 4 years as whoever is elected this cycle gets into office and whatever ballot measures are passed become implemented. So love to work with you and be in touch.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think the last thing that I'll say is that a couple years ago, we built this roadmap to a thriving rural Oregon, which is our vision. It was built out of hundreds, if not thousands, of conversations with rural Oregonians. And this election season, we're looking at who's going to prioritize the things on our roadmap that we know need to be prioritized. But we're also looking at where do we go from here? No one politician is going to be a magic bullet. One of our leaders told me the other day, elections are a chess move, not a Valentine. I'm not going to love every candidate that I'm voting on, but let's work on building that roadmap into reality together. And so we're looking at the next 3 months, but we're mostly, honestly, looking at the next 10 years or 25 years and are excited to push forward our vision of really communities where people can thrive, whether that's through expanding unemployment benefits, increasing school funding, making sure that like we have this paid family medical leave program. It's amazing, but where do we need to go next? How do we have medical infrastructure in every community in Oregon so folks aren't driving hours to get to the closest hospital? All this to say, we're excited to be where we are, and we're excited to see where we can go together in the coming decade.
Well, Emma, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
I've been speaking with Emma Renee Durning with Rural Organizing Project about their stand guide, Small Town Actions for a New Democracy, and much more. Information is online at rop.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
This is Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm Althea Billings. This is our first introductory episode to a brand new daily show we're creating that will lead up to the 2024 election in Portland. Running on Air will be a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. It's a big idea, we're doing it live, and we couldn't be happier to be sharing it with you both over our airwaves and in podcast form. Now, where did this idea come from, right? Journalists around town have been scratching their heads about how to best meet the moment that Portland is in the 2024 election. It's the dawn of a new political age. There is a new form of government that is being formed. It's going to need to be fully in effect by January 2025, and Portlanders will be voting in 12 new city councilors, something they've never done before. And even the method of voting is something that they've never done before with ranked choice voting. So with this is a problem that is presented when it comes to how do you get people informed? There's a lot of people to know. There's a lot of new things about how Portlanders will be voting in this cycle. So for us, the way that we started thinking about this, well, I'll tell you what my first idea was. My first idea was to try to get every candidate to come to the KBOO studios on the same day for like a 10-minute interview. And after shopping that around a little bit, people were telling me, hey, maybe there might be a better way to do this. And so that's where this idea for Running on Air, that's where it came from. We want people to be able to feel really informed about the people that are running in their district. On ballots, looking at ranked choice voting, there's going to be six different ranks. That means at the very least, you should have knowledge about six people that are running in your district. That's a lot more than voters have had to know in years past. So that's where this idea came from. Let's get people together. Let's not make it a debate or a forum per se, but actually try to understand who folks are and how they relate to each other, because there's going to be three winners from each district. Let's do a little background here. So up until very recently, Portland sported a commission style of government. Now, this is something that was actually revolutionary in the early 1900s. It was created in Galveston, Texas. And basically what it meant, it was a new style of government that was created in response to the sort of party boss culture that was happening around the turn of the century. You might remember it from US history class. That was when political parties were operating a little more like the mob, and whoever was, for example, going to be in charge of the Water Bureau, city workers, things like this, that was going to be determined by the party that was in power. And a lot of times what you were seeing is not necessarily that the most competent people were becoming bureaucrats or were running the city systems, but this is so-and-so's nephew who donated a bunch to the campaign. So the commission form of government came out of that, where it vested the control of certain city functions into actual legislators. So that meant that a commissioner who was elected to draft legislation, like we would think of congresspeople doing or state representatives, they were also in charge of something like the Water Bureau, the Parks Bureau, the Police Bureau, things like that. It was a reform for that time, but boy, if Portland didn't stick with it so much longer than any other major city in the country. And it created some interesting problems, problems that Portlanders tried to address through the 2022 measure 26228, which was the charter change measure. in the city charter, there is every 10 years an opportunity to reassess that document and try to make changes and try to put it to the voters. And there had been a few different attempts, actually, at trying to get away from this commissioner form of government because it stacks up a lot of compounding challenges, right? In Portland, we look at four city commissioners that are elected from the whole city. They don't represent a particular place. And from that, we've seen a lot more representation for interests that are on the west side or on the central east side. We've only had one city commissioner in the entire history of Portland who lived east of 82nd. That's also why neighborhood associations are so powerful in Portland, but that's sort of a detour. I don't want to get too off track here. Another thing that it does is it loads a lot of responsibility on those commissioners' plates. They have to represent the whole city, they have to come up with new legislation, but they're also vested with these executive-type powers. So if you're the commissioner of the Portland Bureau of Transportation, you're kind of the CEO of that entire department. Interestingly enough, they also had certain judicial powers when it came to land use. This is something that's in the process of being dismantled ever since voters passed Measure 26228 to reform the government structure to be one where the city council is only focused on legislating and pulling the mayor out of the city council as well. The mayor now has a different role than they've had in the past. No longer a regular voting member of city council, they're in charge of managing the city administrator. And so all of the city administrative functions are now going to be under one roof. It's been a thing in the past to have sort of fracture among city bureaus that are supposed to be working together because they're not led by the same person. So now it's all under one roof, under one city administrator, and Portland will have 12 city councilors that are focused solely on developing the laws of the city. Another important thing that this measure did is it created district representation. So there are now four geographic districts in Portland, and each one will elect three members to city council. The thinking there is that it will create more accountability for city councilors because they represent a smaller scope of interests that they're trying to bring to the council. Another interesting wrinkle is that it's a multi-member election, which means that there's going to be three from each district. Functionally, because we're electing three from each district, the amount of votes that these folks need in order to make it into office is 25% of the vote plus one. 25 plus one. And some people see that and they say, oh, it's such a slim amount of people that got any of what they wanted. But really, you can look at it district by district and say 75% of the people in this particular area have somebody on council that they prefer, that was one of their first choices. And that's the other thing, right, is it's ranked choice voting, both for the city council and for the mayor. The thinking behind ranked choice voting is that it allows for a broader scope of folks to be able to be in the race and to matter to the race. It's not a situation where if you vote for somebody who's more unlikely to win, that your vote ends up getting wasted. It can then be applied to your second choice. But all of this is a ton of new information, and Portlanders are looking at a scope of 80, 100 different candidates across the city that are vying for these spots. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to be excited about. And it's a time when Portlanders really got to focus in on what they want to say on their ballot. And so that's what our goal is here, right? We're going to be producing a daily show, and we're breaking it out by district, right? So Mondays are for District 1, Tuesdays are for District 2, Wednesdays are for District 3, Thursdays are for District 4, and on Fridays we'll be talking to mayoral candidates. The goal here is to create a resource, right? And so it may not be in everyone's best interest to listen to every episode. It might make more sense to figure out what district you're in and listen to those episodes, find out more about those candidates, how they relate to each other, and how they're going to take on the challenges of this new government system and becoming a city councilor. There's also the question of what are our candidates going to be talking about on this show? That is going to be rooted in the KBOO election agenda survey. Those results are coming out at the end of August. We asked nearly 500 community members, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? And we're going to focus on what they said. What do people really want to know in order to feel informed when they get their ballot in the mail? That's what we're going to be focusing on. Running on Air will have a rotating panel of hosts, so it's going to be some of your KBOO favorites are going to be helping out with this project. I'm very grateful for that. So we'll be able to have different voices and different perspectives on every episode. If you would like to engage with the show, if you want to give us feedback, if you want to ask questions, we would love that. You can reach out to us over email. It's runningonair@kboo.org. And definitely tune in live. We may be taking calls or questions from our website, kboo.fm. Speaking of kboo.fm, you can find the show there. You should also be able to find the show wherever you get your podcasts. We want to make it a resource where you can come back to it again and again if you need to. Don't miss an episode. Find us on your favorite podcasting app as well. Well, that's the little introduction of what we're going to be doing for Running on Air on KBOO Community Radio, and a little bit of the context of why we think it's important to make time for this kind of a thing. I'm really looking forward to this project. I'm really looking forward to this election and seeing what happens for this big step forward for Portland. Thank you to everyone who is helping behind the scenes, and thank you for listening. This has been your little introduction to Running on Air. I'm Althea Billings, the producer. Our first episode is going to be on September 3rd at 10 a.m. Tune in.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with